all. Welcome to a special bonus episode of Nutrition Pearls, the podcast from NASPN's Council for Pediatric Nutrition Professionals, or CPNP. Today, I'm your solo host, Bailey Koch, Pediatric GI Dietitian at Atlanta Pediatric Nutrition. We have an exciting lineup today featuring Sadie Nagel, our expert celiac dietitian, and her colleague, psychologist Monique Germoni. Let's get on to the show. Sadie, we loved having you on our celiac episode last week. I learned so much, even having worked with this population and having a son with celiac myself. You mentioned that your celiac center is unique and that you have a psychologist on your team that sees your patients with you. And we are so grateful to have you both on today's bonus episode. Welcome, Monique Germoni. Dr. Germoni stands among a select few psychologists committed exclusively to advancing the cause of behavioral health and celiac disease and gluten-related disorders. Since 2015, she has proudly served as the attending psychologist at the Colorado Center for Celiac Disease at Children's Hospital, Colorado. In addition, she has an academic appointment as an associate professor of psychiatry and pediatrics at the University of Colorado Anschutz Medical Campus. Dr. Germoni has secured coveted grant funding for her investigations into the biopsychosocial aspects of celiac disease. Her work aims to provide a brighter future for those with this condition. To start us off, can you all tell us how the collaboration between the two of you came about and how this collaboration of the pediatric dietitian and psychologist benefits newly diagnosed celiac patients and their families?
Yeah, sure. So back when I started in 2015 with the clinic, we had a dietitian, two physicians, and we had a PA as well that worked on our team. So we were a pretty small team. And it worked kind of like a standard clinic where each of us would kind of see the patients on our own. And it was interesting because the families were spending a lot of time in our clinic trying to see all of us. And not everyone was getting screened for any kind of psychosocial needs or behavioral health needs. And we really kind of felt that families could really benefit from seeing all of us, but how could we make this a little bit easier for families and not so time consuming? So then we started having integrated visits, and I kind of bounced between seeing them with our GI docs or seeing them with a dietitian. And we found it was really helpful to meet with a dietitian together. It reduced a lot of the questions that the families had to answer multiple times. And we really were working together and supporting one another's care. So if a question about kind of creating a behavior plan or supporting non-adherence, we could like tag team together and really help. And so I think that's really kind of what started this. And we found out quite quickly it helped the families and it helped our care too.
Nice. So can you walk us through a clinic visit with both of you? Like now, do you and Sadie always go in together or do y'all sometimes go separately? Like how long do the visits last?
Yeah. So our celiac center recommends that patients follow up with us within the first 2 to 3 months post-diagnosis and starting the gluten-free diet. And we actually recommend that our patients see Monique and I together in a single visit. And we do our visits through telehealth. So it gives patients this ability to run to their pantry or pull their kid from school really quickly. Or we've even had patients who've logged in from their high school and parents are logged in from work. So it's really, breaks down those barriers of access to care. But we see these patients together and really we kind of introduce ourselves, kind of go through what the visit's going to look like. And we really frame it like we're kind of their gluten detectives. We're making sure that things are running really smoothly in all aspects of the gluten-free diet for the patient and the family. We kind of also phrase it like I'm more as the dietitian, like the medical provider, and like this is the medical piece of the gluten-free diet. And Monique really helps us with this doing aspect, such as like, we really struggle with going out to eat because we're afraid. And Monique really helps our families with, all right, well, how do we work towards that as a part of our quality of life piece? Which is the beauty of like this partnership. Really, with having a psychologist integrated into these dietitian adherence assessments too. We also, our visits are roughly, I would say about 60 minutes, give or take. It kind of really depends on what the family needs are. If we're having to do some additional works around like adherence pieces or some re-education or really like developing a strategy, that might be like a month to month kind of follow-up if we are really struggling with adhering to the gluten-free diet.
So you said 2 to 3 months after diagnosis. Sadie, do you meet with them right at diagnosis by yourself to go over just the gluten-free diet? And then you'll have a meeting together 2 to 3 months into it?
Yeah. So our physicians, they'll do like a pre-diagnostic visit. Patient will sometimes get the diagnosis at that pre-diagnostic visit based on serology, blood work. Some may have to undergo the endoscopy to get the biopsy to confirm the disease. And once that disease, the celiac disease diagnosis has been confirmed, they get referred to me to do group education. And we really promote group education because it's this beautiful format that allows families to recognize that they're not the only ones going through this, but they also kind of play off of each other in questions. So it's really, really nice to do these group classes. And I host them about twice a month on like a Friday afternoon to kind of help with families being able to have access to that. It's also done virtually. Certainly we'll do one-to-one educations where it's needed as well. Or even sometimes what Monique and I will do if a patient is really struggling with the initial piece of this diagnosis, we'll actually first meet with them together, provide them with some really simple just understanding and education of what the gluten-free diet is, and work towards this plan of being adherent in the gluten-free diet too.
Okay. Do you approach visits with a younger patient versus an adolescent differently? Or do y'all do your initial group classes? Are they done by age?
Great question. We actually lump them all together. And really, it's because we try to give them the solid base, right, of their pyramid of the gluten-free diet education. Certainly, sometimes throughout different aspects of their lives, and this is where we'll sometimes recommend that families follow up with us during big life changes, such as maybe going from elementary school to middle school or to high school to college, because there's different things that Monique and I will talk about with families as it relates to adhering to the gluten-free diet. But currently for just like their initial education, they all come together.
Okay. All right. And then you have the ability to do a one-on-one, you know, as needed based on the individual.
Yes. Yes, absolutely. Especially if there's maybe multiple food allergies involved, or there's other comorbidities that really require special attention, like non-alcoholic fatty liver disease and celiac disease, and being mindful of the components that the gluten-free diet does have in relation to that disease.
Okay. So I think you mentioned like families that are struggling a little bit more than others, and that's always a big hurdle, non-compliance with the diet. I find it tends to be more of the asymptomatic kids that don't understand that even though they don't feel sick when they eat gluten, it is still a problem for them. What are some of the ways to approach a patient who just doesn't want to follow the diet, whether they have symptoms or not? Or if they, you know, may find it unfair that they have celiac disease, but no one else in their family does. I find everybody's different. In my family, my son could care less. We eat about, I'd say 90, 95% gluten-free. You know, he's fine. But I've definitely had patients that do struggle with, why am I the only one? How do y'all address that?
Yeah, I think it's definitely a tough piece and one of our favorite things to do together while we kind of do our visits together. And just to your point, Bailey, too, it is very individualized in our clinic. So we really want to hear from families kind of what's going on all together. How are the families kind of dealing with the transition and how is this impacting them as well? What kind of supports do they have in place? What kinds of things have they already tried? Those types of things. And I think both for families where the children are asymptomatic, it can be really rough because there isn't that natural consequence of eating something, that natural feedback even too, right? Like this is bad for my body and I can automatically feel that too, right? And they don't have that signal. And I think too, it's also really hard for families that are having a hard time making ends meet too, and let alone affording the gluten-free diet. The gluten-free diet is incredibly expensive. And so I think it impacts a lot of families in that way too, in terms of actually accessing food. So we definitely work hard to support our families when these things come up as well. I will say for our asymptomatic children, we do talk a lot with families about making sure that they have special foods and things that feel special to them. So really making sure they have a wide variety of gluten-free foods that they enjoy. So we work with them on helping to provide those replacement ideas and increasing access to food outside of the home, like dining out, those types of things. And then also, again, making it special. So everyone can eat their food, but then if they're really struggling, we talk about, hey, how do you think, you know, how would you feel if you, it was just yours, you got to say whether they could have your gluten-free Oreos, or you got to say whether they could share this pizza with you, those types of things, so that they have a little bit more of an ability to have some of that autonomy around their food. And it's not such a, like, there's a positive now about it too, right, that they get to have back. So we try to talk about a lot of those things too with them.
Yeah, I think that's a great point. When I broke the news to my son that this was, you know, what was causing his problems, I went to Whole Foods and bought the most junk food I think I've ever had in my house and put it all on the counter. And I was like, well, you can't have gluten, but look at all this wonderful stuff that you can have. And, you know, I think that definitely helped as far as like the initial blow of you can't have Oreos. Oh, but you could have these Oreos and you can't, you know, it does make a big difference giving them some special foods that are just theirs. So sometimes parents are the ones that are struggling to cope with their child's diagnosis. How do you handle the parents versus the children?
Yeah, I think especially in my practice as a psychologist, my frame of reference, I really do believe in the power of family and our family members and helping to set patients and kids up for success with a lot of things that they're dealing with, including celiac disease in this transition. And so, like I mentioned, we really do try to work with the whole family and really kind of investigate how it's going for them and how this is a big change for their family and their family culture. And so we do spend a lot of time kind of investigating that. I think one of the biggest things that I've noticed for parents who are caregivers who are kind of struggling with this change is really kind of tapping into kind of some of their own worries for their children, especially about their worrying that their child is going to be viewed as different or have a really hard time now that there is a difference that's very visible. And so we spend a lot of time kind of talking through that with them and again, kind of supporting and exploring that with them. We talk a lot too about modeling, right? So if you're as a parent or caregiver modeling kind of worries and fear and navigating the diet or being different, right? Like your child will notice that whether consciously or subconsciously, right? And so really trying to model some of those behaviors we want them to show too and having that time with them and connection. So, yeah.
Yeah. How do you all support families in maintaining some of the social connections and participating in events while also managing a gluten-free diet? I know that that's one of the big worries of parents and kids too, birthday parties, school parties, things like that. What are some suggestions that you all provide to help work through those? And then how do you empower the children and adolescents to advocate for themselves in social settings and other environments as well?
Well, first, what I would say is that in our after visit summary, we have put in a lot of different like kind of social events that are occurring in our just Denver metro area for where we're at, as well as even national events that are sometimes webinar based. So we do a lot of that. We also do a lot of My Chart blasts around very specific celiac kid related things. There's the big celiac summit coming up for teenagers. And so we try to put out blasts so that way our families who are a part of our center know about these as potential opportunities for their child to really participate from a social aspect amongst peers too. Some other things that we really kind of encourage is just, you know, do you have a classmate who also has celiac disease? You know, navigating those types of things together, potentially in the classroom. Another big thing that we talk about actually when we meet together with the families is how do they navigate those sleepovers or birthday parties and family holidays? So that way the child does feel included in all of those. And a lot of the times we do hear families saying, I had a conversation with that parent or that family member in advance about the dietary needs. We brought food with just as backup, or we choose to eat in advance because maybe there's additional things that we're doing in our diet and lifestyle too, outside of just the gluten-free diet. So there's a lot of different ways to kind of approach it from a social aspect. And I think it's important to kind of see what's in your community and what's available, so that way you're also speaking to that and providing that to your families that you do interact with.
Do y'all have like a social media page just for these patients, or you just do it through your practice social media page, or just through MyChart?
We actually don't have a social media page, but we're really lucky in Denver where we have a national celiac chapter group here who is incredibly active on social media. And so we'll have families either check out their website. Sometimes we'll say check out their Instagram for upcoming events. But we really try to stay on top of like our after visit summary that our physicians are using. So that way that's the most up-to-date social information that families are getting.
Okay. So another big challenge with celiac, or really any chronic disease in GI, is the development of disordered eating behaviors, especially when they're looking for relief from GI symptoms, and then they over-restrict or develop ARFID. Are you all working with these patients on these problems, or do you refer them to a disordered eating specialist? Can you briefly discuss your approach with these kids?
Yeah, and I think that brings up a really important topic that we see in any kind of dietary restriction, whether it's celiac disease, EoE, other types of food allergies, IBD, right? Where maybe diet is this mainstay of treatment. You have that potential of having a potential like ARFID like picture or other types of restrictive eating behaviors. What we really try to do is Monique and I will assess for a greater concern for an eating disorder. And if we do find that as a bigger concern, we do refer them to those specialties. So that way they are getting the proper care. If it's something that's, you know, just it's starting to tiptoe in that direction, we'll really try to support them in the sense of, you know, this is your dietary need for celiac disease. How do we maybe work towards dining out? Dining out seems really scary because of cross contact. You're worried about crumbs. And that's where we can have this partnership of how do we work towards that type of exposure to really prevent something going to be, you know, quote unquote, extreme of a full eating disorder.
Yeah, that's a tough situation, especially when there is a restrictive diet that is required medically, you know, so that's always a tough population for me. What kind of resources for families that screen food insecure do you all have? Does this fall on Monique, you and Sadie, or is there a social worker that also works with you on this piece?
Yeah, so we definitely, as I was mentioning before, kind of talk with families about kind of what's going on, their situation, especially for any families that are having a tougher time adhering to the gluten-free diet. At our hospital, we have health navigators, a health navigator role, and their whole role is to help families to connect with resources in the community and within our hospital for a wide variety of needs. And they are also available to help increase their access to food resources and other, you know, just daily living resources too. So we typically can put in a referral to those providers to support us. We also do have access to social work, but because of our great health navigator team, they kind of are our first line to help address any of those issues that arise.
Do y'all have a food pantry at your hospital, or just connect them with resources?
So unfortunately, we don't have a food pantry per se, but we do have something called a Healthy Roots Clinic that we're working on, hopefully having a partnership with, so that way our families could have free access to things like gluten-free staple foods, like bread products, pasta products, as well as fresh fruits and vegetables and other things that are naturally gluten-free. So that's a partnership we're working on right now, because it's a clinic that stands for our kind of pediatrician residence program, where for when those patients do screen food insecure.
Okay. What could dietitians and celiac centers do to help screen for mental health red flags if they are working without a psychologist in their department?
Yeah, absolutely. In a couple studies now that we've done through our clinic, we've noticed especially a higher increase in anxiety and depression, anxiety amongst our younger kiddos and depression amongst our adolescents, definitely a higher incidence in celiac disease and likely in any chronic condition as well. So it's a great thing to keep an eye out for. And so I think if, you know, generally there'll be some concerns that are kind of brought, whether it is around that feeding concern about worries about cross contact or, you know, any kind of feeding issues, or if there's mood issues, there's been a big change in the child's interests or energy levels, right? Sleep changes, right? So if the family's talking about some big changes to the child's mood or behavior, especially behavior, is kind of a good indicator that there might be something else going on. And so generally, referral back to the pediatrician to talk about mood or behavior can be really helpful, especially if you don't have a contact to somebody like in social work or a psychologist or other behavioral health provider if you don't have a direct contact there. But it generally, kind of the screening is looking for any big behavioral changes, again, kind of sleep, eating patterns, those types of things, and can be a good referral to say, hey, maybe why don't you check in with your pediatrician just to see if there's been anything kind of going on with mood or behavior. Usually pediatricians have some great community resources or even access to behavioral health providers in their clinics themselves. So it might be a great thing to check up on. I will also mention too that it can happen at quite a young age, right? So even if the kid is 5 years old and they're noticing some kind of behavioral differences, it's okay and definitely warranted to ask that the family check in with the pediatrician, because we do see an impact to younger kids across the United States too in terms of mental health needs. And so it's always better to kind of refer if you're kind of getting a feeling for something than it is to wait. So that would kind of be that first line, is just referring back to the pediatrician too.
Do you find that kids like maybe initially seem to struggle more with mental health issues, but as they get used to the gluten-free diet and they have these resources and they learn how to manage social situations and I guess they're how to manage their new normal, do you find that that improves? Or if they struggle with it initially, they're maybe always going to be one of the kids that struggles with that. Is there a difference?
Yeah, it's kind of hard to say. There's a few pieces of literature out there that suggest that when you're actively eating gluten, right, and you have active disease state, right, from celiac, that it can impact like your attention and focus, right, this brain fog type piece, and also your mood and behavior, so anxiety and depression, right? And those are sometimes too, especially for our asymptomatic kids, we'll talk to them about, hey, you know when you're having trouble and it kind of like seems kind of foggy, or you know when you get kind of grumpy a lot, like that could be a symptom for you, actually. So you might want to check and see if you're getting exposed to gluten, if your behavior and your mood are changing. So there's that one piece too that we talk to kids with celiac about. There's also this chicken or the egg type of piece, right? Where some of these things can improve focus, behavior, mood, right, can improve, and quite dramatically for some families, right, when they start this gluten-free diet. But we also have seen in that study I mentioned too about anxiety, depression in our younger kids and our adolescents, that actually is post-diagnosis, post-treatment, right? So they're on a gluten-free diet and we're still seeing a higher incidence rate well into like 2 years into their diagnosis, for example, right? So have gone through that initial really pretty stressful hump of, you know, transitioning and getting this new normal. So they've got kind of their normal and they're still kind of dealing with stuff. And so I think, you know, it's always great to keep checking in with your kids. That's the other thing that was kind of pointed out in one of our studies too, is that the parents actually did not rate their kids as high on our screening measures as the kids themselves did. So the kids were saying, I need help. I'm feeling depressed, isolated, irritable, lonely, right? And the parents didn't notice it. And so it's definitely something to kind of keep checking in about too, so that you can get these kids help too.
Great point. Okay. Well, Monique and Sadie, are both of you, are there any other tips for dietitians out there or resources to share that might be helpful, especially for, you know, the psych component or for dietitians that don't have access to a psychologist in practice?
Absolutely. And I think I touched quite a bit on like the pieces in our previous discussion, but I'd really encourage dietitians not to hesitate to reach out to other dietitians across the nation and even the world, those especially in celiac centers, to really help them understand how to maybe approach these kids, or you're struggling with getting kids to adhere, those types of things. I really would encourage others to just reach out to us, because many of us do have the ability to have a nice discussion with you and give you some tips and tricks as well. So there's plenty of listservs out there for you to put those questions out on as well. I'll let Monique share one big project that she's actually been a part of that's a great resource too for dietitians.
Yeah, I think Sadie is referencing our Celiac Disease Behavioral Science Consortium. It is a free group of professionals who are interested in behavioral health and celiac disease. So that it initially started as a larger international group of psychologists, but we've expanded to include our dietitian colleagues. We have an occupational therapist. So we've got kind of a broad group of individuals who are really interested in learning more about behavioral health and either practice it, study it, both in our group. And so it's free to join. We have free webinars, 30-minute webinars. Nick Trott, who's an expert dietitian from the UK, has presented, and Sadie Nagel has presented as well. So there's definitely representation from dietitians in our webinars. And we just kind of give updates on these webinars in terms of what's been some recent advancements in behavioral health and celiac disease too. So definitely check out our Celiac Disease Behavioral Science Consortium. Again, it's free to become a member. We just started a listserv, so you can pose questions to the listserv to get advice, to learn about new programs and things that are happening, conferences that are happening about celiac disease. So again, definitely check it out.
That sounds like a great resource. We can link that in the description for the episode at the end. So I'll probably hop on there myself. So thank you for letting us know. Well, thank you for both coming on here, taking time out of your busy days to meet with us. And y'all have a great rest of the week.
Yes, thank you.
Thank you, Bailey. And thank you again for having us.
Thank you for tuning in to this insightful bonus episode. If you don't already, please consider following the show. We will announce upcoming episodes on the CPNP social media accounts, Facebook and Instagram and Twitter or X. If you are a CPNP member and have a topic idea, feel free to email us at cpnp@naspgan.org. Nutrition Pearls podcast is supported by an educational grant from Reckitt Mead Johnson Nutrition. The content is the sole responsibility of the host and not influenced by its supporters, and the information discussed during these episodes is subject to change over time with new developments and advances in the field of medical nutrition therapy. Thanks everyone for listening. Bye-bye.